Yo, Joes and agents of Cobra Command, my name is Steve. This is episode 318 of G.I. Joburg. We're calling it the Sky Striker XP-14F, which is the Sky Striker. I'm joined by my friends, Paul. Hey, Rob.
Paul. Hi, Paul.
And Rob. I gotta hear myself.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Bert.
And the rules with our pre-record shows, which we do every alternating week, which this you're listening and watching one right now, is that we are going to talk about a toy, not just any toy, a toy that we all have in some way, shape, or form. And this week, it is an absolute legend of G.I. Joe. But this being G.I. Joeberg and us being kind of late to the party in most respects, this is a toy that we got in hand well into our adulthood. So as legendary as it is, all of our memories of it are kind of colored by, like, hindsight. And
yeah, being grown up.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to try and interrogate exactly how amazing this toy is through this kind of adult lens. Everyone can agree that it is an absolute icon of G.I. Joe. I anticipate this video will be receiving slightly more hits than our last one, the Locust. But gents, what is your brushings with the Sky Striker? Paul?
Yeah, it's like when you asked me the other day as well, I was like, when was the first time I actually encountered a Sky Striker? And I think realistically, I mean, if I have to be like super technical, I think it was a picture, possibly, it was in the cartoon series. I think that's the most, like, accurate thing I can think of, because I can't think of ever actually encountering G.I. Joe's jet before the cartoon. So that was, like, my first blushing with the actual Sky Striker, not the toy Sky Striker. And then the actual toy, well, it was modern era G.I. Joe was the big thing at the time, and everybody was very excited about this piece of shit. And as you can see, I love it so much. It hasn't got any of its tail wings.
Paul is referring to the 30th anniversary retread of the Sky Striker. You know, the one that came in a box that was way too small to hold a fully assembled Sky Striker. How did they fit in there? They yanked the wings off and yanked the nose cone off. Like, this was a very underwhelming unboxing experience if you're used to the classic Sky Striker. So, Paul, you have perhaps the most jaded view of this toy, because that is the only one that you've ever possessed.
Yeah, and actually, you know, to date, it's the only one I've ever actually laid hands on. I've never touched a real Sky Striker.
Oh.
I haven't even seen one in front of me.
Oh.
Despite the fact that both of you guys have one.
That is... Wow.
Let's get into that. Rob, you can weigh in next with your first blushings with the Sky Striker, be it toy, comic book, cartoon.
I like to think it's also the cartoon. It's probably the cartoon, because I don't remember us having that issue with Wild Weasel and Ace when we were
Shakedown,
growing up.
Issue 34. Yeah.
I don't think we had that. So I'd like to think it was probably an episode of the cartoon that you had on VHS or you taped from the television that I
probably
first
the included the episode on the movie copy that we had, which was Cobra's Creatures. That's the one that's infamous for having Junkyard being ejected out of a Sky Striker.
Yes. Okay.
So
yeah.
Mutt, Ripcord, and Junkyard get ejected from Sky Strikers, and they get abducted by Cobra. That's besides the point. It opens with a Sky Striker sequence, and it showcases the sort of canine ejection system. And also,
I was very happy to see that the actual toy has that too. It definitely comes with the same system.
You love launching your dogs out of an aircraft. Straight up.
Animal companions.
And it also showcased a feature that Flint could lock in all of the Sky Strikers and then take them home with him.
Controls, like, all of them.
Everyone ejects out of the Sky Strikers and Flint guides your birds home. But we'll be getting into its cartoon appearances and comic book appearances. But Rob, this is the infamous part of the tale. When we first discovered the internet and we could buy toys through the internet, it was a massive windfall of like buying up as many G.I. Joe vehicles that we had some awareness of but had never played with as possible, as quickly as possible. And in this particular shipment, it was the Cobra Night Raven and the G.I. Joe Sky Striker. And I asked you, man, which of these two jets do you want to be yours? Because then I'll obviously take the other one. And you said...
I said Sky Striker. Yeah. I was like, the other one's pretty cool. And actually, it's kind of silly. I should have chosen the Night Raven because
you should have
already owned the Sky Raven, actually. It's kind of silly of me.
I think because I owned the Sky Raven and you had, you know, some dealings with the actual plastic, you wanted the new one. You wanted the one that we'd never experienced before.
The one that we never had. So the Sky Striker
denied me then.
Yeah, and you'll never have the original.
I cursed your name ever since because I treated your Sky Striker as a toy that was for me too. Like there was my
only opportunity to play with this. That's the way that we always treated our collections a lot. Mm. I mean, obviously it was all at your parents' place, in your room. So it's very easy for you to treat all of my toys as your toys.
Still, for many years, I never had a Sky Striker of my own. My first Sky Striker was the same Sky Striker as Paul's. It was the 2011 30th anniversary, like truncated modern era one, which only seats one person. And as we've already established, you lies down. The wings are all kind of disassembled and it just...
Yeah, they took a lot of liberties to get that thing out again, you know, to be able to like make it and put it out there. There's obviously very big differences and lots of like niggles and problems, I think, with the 30th. But I mean, it's still cool that people were able to get it, you know, and own it. It still has the same profile. It's the same jet, you know. From a distance, you squint at it and you're like, oh yeah, I have a Sky Striker. Don't walk any closer to it.
You know what really irritated me about the Sky Striker, about that 2011 version? Like, it's not the detachable wings or the detachable nose cone or whatever. It is a little bit about the missiles falling off easily is a huge gripe of mine. And it is something that you can fix, but it does bug me. But the thing that really irritated me, not too long after I got the Sky Striker, a little bit before getting the Sky Striker, I went to Toys R Us once and they had this F-22 and it was, it's done by, I think it's called Real Heroes or whatever's, True Heroes or something. And it was an F-22.
Yeah.
And it was decently scaled. I mean, for what it was. I mean, it's not like, you know, Bazonga's huge.
I think the scaling was obviously reduced to like 1:22. But
yeah,
maybe 1:24. But what I liked about that F-22 that you're referring to is the proportions were correct. I mean, compare it to a G.I. Joe Storm Eagle, which you know looks like a chibi jet. This F-22
can it be? Yeah,
yeah. It had the right F-22 proportions. Like it looked like the correct aircraft. The pilot just looked gargantuan inside it or standing next to it. But like, yeah, Paul. Take it away, man. I jumped all over your story.
So, no, it's all good, man. So, like, that toy is very bare bones. It's a plastic jet. It's got a canopy that opens. It's got a dude that you can pop in there. It's got, like, one or two missiles, whatever's, and it's got some landing gear. It's, like, nothing too special. It was also only, like, $400 or something, if I recall correctly, which is a third of the price of the Sky Striker. Yeah, so that was, like, a third of the price of the Sky Striker when I got them. And I felt that it was a better toy. And that was the thing that really irritated me, that some like sort of cheap, straight to Toys R Us brand toy felt better in a lot of respects than the Sky Striker. And that's kind of what hurt me on the 2011 version. I was like, isn't G.I. Joe meant to be like the premium military action figure, you know? And that kind of hurts it a lot. So that was a huge gripe.
The action figure was more premium. Yeah. That Ace, that modern era Ace was... a good stunning action figure, whereas the F-22 came with like a 5 POA POS.
I'm Peter Pirate.
Yeah, exactly. Yank that guy out and throw him in the bin. I'd like to answer my own question and just say that I think my very first actual media exposure to the Sky Striker has got to be Special Missions issue number 5.
Mm.
We spoke about issue 34 already a little bit. We touched on the fact that that's probably the best showcase of the Sky Striker in comic book. But there was a Special Missions not called Shakedown, but called Showdown, where Ace in the Sky Striker is accompanied by Slipstream in the Conquest, and they go up in sort of contested airspace around Cobra Island and Florida, and sort of the Gulf of Mexico. And they just basically play a game of chicken trying to goad a Strata Viper in a Night Raven into just doing something aggressive that they can then act upon. Because Hawk reminds them that, you know, you can't shoot first, otherwise it'll be an international incident. This is Cobra's spy plane, and he's right on the border of our territory. But until he presses fire, you can't fire at him. Anyway, in that episode, or that issue, the Sky Striker was the sacrificial lamb. Like, Ace does some very aggressive stuff. He does the classic Top Gun move. Flies inverted on top of the Night Raven and doesn't flip the bird or take any photographs, but I don't know, just says, "Eat my dust." the Strata Viper shoots him out of the air, and so like Ace is out of the fight. It's basically like more of a moment for Slipstream to shine and take some glory as the latter day G.I. Joe jet jock. Anyway, that was my first exposure to the Sky Striker. And then, as we say, Rob got the damn toy in hand. And I was like, damn it, so man. Cool. I didn't want the Night Raven. I want this thing. This thing cool.
It's cooler than the comic made it out to look.
Let's talk about the cartoon series then. Its first appearance. I mean, this is wonderful. Its very first appearance was in the very first animation frame of the intro sequence of G.I. Joe, the animated series. Device Part 1, The Cobra Strikes. It's front and center, flying through a very dangerous airspace. There are bombs bursting in the air, but the Sky Striker Squadron fly through it. Then we open the episode proper, episode 1 of The Adventures of G.I. Joe, and we see Sky Striker shadows on the desert floor. There's one, and then they're flanked by another two, and then one in the rear, and then it's coming down onto this gorgeously animated sort of POV or sort of following camera as it lands on the runway, all four of them. Sky Strikers everywhere. The frame is just being soaked up by all these jets. Like, clearly, the big push at the beginning of this cartoon series is like, we need to sell as many of these damn jets as possible. Like,
Blues Bar 1983, let's get them out there. Yeah.
Get them going. Yeah, man. And
everyone can fly a Sky Striker, guys. Don't worry.
To the sequence is a very tasty bit of animation, and it is entirely glorifying the Sky Striker. But as I say, not only is it in the first frame of the intro sequence, and then the first frame of the animated episode proper, but it's even in the first line of dialogue where Stalker says, "The new Sky Striker is a real beauty."
Yeah, it's so good. I love it.
Push
me and my girlfriend.
Sale.
Put a dog in that.
Who's behind the stick? It's Scarlet.
Amazing. Yeah.
And Cobra attacks, and like, the Sky Striker, I'm going to wager, is probably the G.I. Joe vehicle that has been blown up the most on screen in the cartoon series. Mm-hmm. Because, like, the airfield is just littered with Sky Striker wrecks within seconds. It's evident that Cobra's just wanting to lay waste to G.I. Joe's squadron. And boy, oh boy, do they achieve their goal, I'll say.
It's. I feel like it's in almost every single episode. I mean, of at least of the original series, and getting blown up, but even just being in there. I mean, it is their primary transportation for the basically the entire run of the original series of the cartoon.
True.
That's how they get
Anytime
around.
The Joes needed to be sort of transcontinental. They didn't typically jump in a transport plane. They were each behind the stick of their own Skull Striker.
Yeah, they have their own. It's worse than traffic. You know, like traffic filled with cars with just one driver in it. Like, literally, the sky is just filled with Sky Strikers. Okay, I'm going to go through. It's like, I'm sure, you know, commercial airlines were very upset every time. They were like, oh, God, the Joes are going on a mission again. We have to reroute all these passenger planes, you know.
You've got this, like, Sky Striker behind, like, honking, like, me, 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 me,
out the way. I'm on my way to
That's very hot shots.
To take out Cobra.
Now, if issue 34 is the Sky Striker's shining moment in the comic book series, I would argue that the final part of Revenge of Cobra, a.k.a. the Weather Dominator, is its shining moment in the cartoon series. Can anyone remember what I might be referring to?
Sergeant Slaughter is flying a Sky Striker and he rams it into
with a dog on his lap.
Blows up, they come out the top and the you know, the parachute shoots and then he wraps the cords around Serpentor and he's like, yeah, freedom wins again.
Nice one. Paul, you want to have a go, bud?
That it?
Okay. Oh, dude, no. The heart says yes, but the memory says no. I can't remember. All right, like, all
right. Well, we reviewed it ages ago, but...
Back in 2012.
At the very end, we've got a Sky Striker piloted by Flint. It's G.I. Joe's final assault on the Cobra Temple in the desert.
That was close.
Sky Striker piloted by Flint with Shipwreck and Lady J in the back.
Well, I was right about there being a bitch in there.
Well, they're both right. Yeah. Shipwreck is thrilled about that. In the back of Lady J. So, Cobra Command wants to lower this temple beneath the desert. So, there's this gigantic, like, sort of screw, cog, or whatever, that is turning on the inside to kind of make the castle descend into the sand. Flint's like, to hell with this. I'm going to stop Cobra. He flies the Sky Striker sort of Death Star 2 style, Battle of Endor, like into the Cobra Temple in this gorgeously animated sequence. Very difficult to do. So many moving parts in that one sequence because the camera is actually moving.
Yeah.
They're animating everything.
Yeah.
And he flies in, fires a missile at this sort of central... screw, for lack of a better term, and ba-boom. Crazy. That I think is probably the coolest Sky Striker moment. I mean, there are others, like in Permanence of Darkness.
No, that is a cool one.
They fly through Enterprise City chasing I think Destro in
No, that irritates me. This is actually much cooler.
So there's no shortage of like cool moments. And do you guys remember the moment in, I think it's, what's it called, The Wrong Stuff? The episode where they all go to space to knock out a satellite commanded by the Dreadnoks.
I remember it.
Everyone trains to take Sky Striker into space, basically. A lot of them wash out. I think Lady J, Wild Bill, Roadblock, and Ace all make it into the sort of space Sky Striker.
Usual
program.
Suspects. Yeah.
Anyways, I clearly could just spin about the cartoon series.
Exactly.
All night.
I mean, it really is the workhorse of the cartoon. I mean, I think way beyond, you know, its sort of like shelf life, when obviously it eventually left the shelves, it was still the featured vehicle. I mean, you just couldn't replace it with anything else for quite some time. So it definitely have dozens of memorable moments.
Which
for
is weird
that they would tell us about in the comments.
Yeah. It's just, which is odd because the only like repaint we get of it is the Night Boomer in the vintage line. We never got like a Tiger Striker.
Yeah, in the vintage line. But I mean, I feel like it's probably one of the vehicles that's gotten the most repaints. I mean,
they made up for
the entire history, you know.
Damn. Yeah, no, they definitely
did. G.I. Joe. Like the modern line had what the Starscream version, the, you know, there's the black
Jetfire
version.
There was a Cobra version, the Cobra Scythe, I think it's called.
Something
we don't
like
want to talk
that.
About all that
it's,
stuff.
But anyway.
But I do want to, I do feel like, like, I know there's like a whole bunch of variants, but I do think mentioning the Jetfire one is kind of like an interesting one. Because unlike the others, the Jetfire one, they actually, they added parts to it to make it look like a VF1, to make it look like a Valkyrie. And they did that whole vibe from, and they colored it up like Jetfire.
Sorry, I'm just going to wind you up.
But actually, I'm glad that Steve mentioned Robotech, because Harmony Gold had a huge poo in their pants about it. And they tried to get Hasbro to stop producing it and blah, blah, blah. And turns out that actually Harmony Gold had no real sway there. But unfortunately, because of that, Hasbro did actually, you know, react quite quickly. So now they think, yeah, they did pull them back a bit, you know, just to avoid any further legal implications or whatever. But yeah, it's kind of made that a rare kind of variant. Like, guys, I'm not trying to say this because I want to drive up the price, God forbid. But yeah, it is one of those toys where if you see it going for a certain price and it's quite a bit higher than its, say, contemporaries, that's why. You know, it's, I mean, I think it's very average, to be honest with you. But yeah, that's the thing. That's the one variant that is like kind of notable. The rest are all like,
it's color variations.
They're just color swaps. Yeah, they're not exciting.
So we talked about Sky Strikers in cartoons. We talked about Sky Strikers in comic books. Oh, but we didn't mention that. Oh, just for the record, the Sky Strikers' first appearance in the Larry Hama A-Raw comic book was in issue number 14, Destro Attacks. And it's a blink and you miss it moment. It's very brief. But it's there. It's definitely there.
I'm Destro and I'm attacking.
Destro does indeed attack.
Watch
well,
me
no,
attack.
This is the issue where G.I. Joe is closing in on Springfield, Vermont, which is where Cobra's, I think, toxin is being tested. Plague toxin.
Wow.
Cobra Commander is in attendance with the Baroness. G.I. Joe is advancing on this town. And Destro stops G.I. Joe's advance, allowing Cobra Commander to escape. And then Ace tries to catch Cobra Commander in the Sky Striker jet.
So, like, wait, then, like, there's a Springfield in Canada?
Vermont. No, not Canada. Not Vancouver.
Not Vermont.
Not Vermont.
Yeah.
America has a lot of towns that exist everywhere else in the entire world. I believe there's a Berlin. Yeah. There's probably a Dublin. Obviously, a thousand Springfields.
There are only so many names in the English language. So we've talked about the cartoon, we've talked about the comic book. Did you guys know that the Sky Striker is in fact playable in a video game?
No way. So they put it into a new only video recently. Game coming out.
In 1985, wow. For the Commodore 64, there was a G.I. Joe video game by Epix.
Wow.
E-P-Y-X.
I kind of feel like we need to do a special episode for just this game one day, because
guys, I thanks to you, Paul, tracked down an insidious means of playing it, and
the only way of playing it,
well, yes, of course, who's got a functioning Commodore? I mean, you'd have to strip,
well,
like,
there are people that have them. Yeah,
in America, maybe it
might,
I mean,
function for a day. But yes, I deleted it within 24 hours. Don't worry, guys. I'm still on the right side of the law. That blocky gray thing, if you're watching the video version of this podcast,
is it a bird?
Is actually a Sky Striker. Because if you select the Sky Striker for a level that allows you to play it. This is the selection screen. You can select to use the Sky Striker with Ace, the Mobat with Steeler, the Dragonfly with Wild Bill, and the Vamp with Clutch, or the Vamp Mark II with Clutch. If you select the Sky Striker, they play the theme music and it flies across the screen. Across the G.I. Joe HQ. Very much like one model screen for the cartoon version. It's massive.
I'm
massive,
really trying not to comment on the game here.
Mm.
Yeah, because I really want to save it for an episode of that.
You have beat us again, G.I. Joe.
Have you played it?
I didn't manage to get it to work with controls. I had one of those weeks where I just did not have the time to spare to do this. So I really want to, though, because it looks fascinating.
I can say with some confidence that the Sky Striker sequences of the game are the least playable, even with controls that work. Left roll, you know, will turn your plane clockwise, counterclockwise. Right will turn your plane clockwise. Up means you're pulling back on the stick, which increases your altitude. And down, obviously, forward on the D-pad will decrease your altitude. It's like pushing forward on the stick.
Mm.
Your altitude determines how far your missiles fire. So,
okay.
Trying to get the sweet spot to get your missiles to kind of explode far enough away from your jet. And unlike the Dragonfly sections where you can obviously just hover, the Sky Striker is always in forward motion. So trying to hit ground targets like the HISS tanks and sort of Cobra radar stations, they didn't make a toy of that, sadly. I guess it was a precursor to the surveillance port, but yeah, in the screenshot I'm showing you guys right now, it's colored in brown. Trying to hit the HISS tanks and these radar stations is an absolute ball ache. Not terribly much fun. And I had no idea how to end the stage once I had destroyed them all. I'm just flying around aimlessly while the G.I. Joe theme plays to let me know that I've won. What you have to actually do, guys, because I was trying to fly around, trying to find my landing terrain, anything that resembled a runway. No, just like the cartoon, basically, you can land this thing on the desert floor. You can land this thing on grass. You push down on the stick until you basically plow this thing into the ground. And then some guys arrive and it's mission accomplished.
Wow. They just cool. knew wherever you land, they're ready for you. They're just following
wherever
you.
Wherever you land, there's trouble. Wait.
But I mean, how long did I fly around wondering, like, okay, am I looking for something? Okay, I guess I'll just try and kill myself.
I was going to say that sounds like the most difficult version of this mission, because I mean, I watched some footage from this game, and there's the human based missions where you're kind of fighting against Cobra, and you have to basically defeat Cobra twice. You have to kill him twice.
One on one battles, like you select Snake Eyes, they select Baroness.
Those are great. You fight them to the death. While the vehicle missions, I mean, obviously you have four vehicle choices, but the other ones seemed pretty straightforward. You know, you ride around, you know, with Grunt, you destroy the things, and then the mission ends.
Clutch.
It sounds like Clutch. It sounds like with the Sky Striker, basically, unless you've read the manual, which I'm sure the game came with originally, you know, you wouldn't know how to end the mission. It sounds like the toughest version of the vehicles to choose.
Do I have to press reset on this emulation, which is totally foreign to me? I've never played a C64 in my life. So it's very intimidating. So I was just like, okay, I just got to kill myself, clearly.
But it looks good. The representation that they have on the vehicle selection screen is fantastic. It's a very good representation of the vehicle itself.
They bothered to differentiate the three kinds of missiles, at least on the graphic. I mean, you only fire one type of missile in the game, but it's a good graphic. And seeing these 1985 pixels just delight me. Really tickles the nostalgia button.
In fact, to throw in a weird kind of abstract pixel representation for you guys, if you are jonesing to have an old school experience with a jet that you see from a sort of pseudo top down isometric kind of angle, like you really, really want revenge on the fact that the Sky Striker sucks on the C64 game, Top Gun 2 on the NES has the in cockpit sections where you're flying in the cockpit and you're doing what you're doing, and then it's got these bombing runs, and then they turn it into like sort of isometric and you fly around. Mm. And those were actually quite well done. For their time, anyway. They have their issues. But anyway, if you really wanted that experience, that would be the better version.
Let's not lose sight of the
fact
that if you want a representation of the Sky Striker in old school retro gaming, you need only play a Top Gun game or an Afterburner. Yeah. Like, there are enough
Afterburner, indeed.
F-14 games to give you that kick. So yes, the Sky Striker exists in video games.
I would love to have played Top Gun Beyond, whatever that first mission was, but I could never land those damn jets. I could never land it. Like, you're coming in too fast, coming in too slow, you're coming in too fast. More power, power, no power, less thrust, more thrust.
There's an abstract thing on that game that you'll only know if you had the manual, and it basically is like, I think you have to hold A and B and press up and down to reduce your speed.
Absolutely wild. No, we unfortunately ridiculous. Have the, you know, the knockoff NES consoles here. And
so we never had the manuals.
1,000 games. We never had the manuals. 1,000 games on a cartridge. And not a single manual in sight. Yeah.
But yeah, Top Gun 2 was definitely.
What a hell of a cool first mission that was.
Hell yeah, I love that. I could play that for hours.
It's the third mission I couldn't get past. There was like a night mission, and then when you do that landing, that's the one that we generally got stuck at all the time.
Oof, heavy
somehow taste. We by some kind of black magic and, you know, unrelenting determination of a six-year-old, we managed to get the first two landings right, but the first landing right, and then the second landing was a botch. Anyway, either way, we did see a nighttime mission. I have seen more than one mission in that game.
Guys, should we get into the fictional stats of this aircraft?
Yes, the Blue Brants. Yeah.
So, my favorite go-to, because there are a few when it comes to researching stats on this aircraft, because the Sky Striker, ubiquitous. Like, this is the quintessential vehicle in the heyday of G.I. Joe. A lot of different sources have information on it. Mm-hmm. But I like to resort to the Tactical Arms Compendium included in the Action Force comic book.
Whoa.
Okay.
Yeah. That is... You're reaching back.
Did you see that one coming?
I didn't. The British are going to tell us the best stats for an American jet.
Oh, an American Navy plane piloted by an Air Force pilot. Yep. Uh-huh. But it's got a gorgeous illustration of the toy. I mean, jet. But it also gives you... It gives you the stats in metric, which, God bless Britain.
Much
they're
better.
To blame for the imperial system, but they thankfully ditched it. This thing can fly at like just over Mach 2. Mm. Insane. They don't make them like that anymore. It's got blistering amount of speed.
Did they ever make them like that?
What was the actual airspeed of the F-14?
Yeah, I don't think it... I don't know if it can quite get to Mach 2, but I think it gets just shy of, actually, if memory serves.
Hmm.
But anyway, it's cool that the... Listen, it's obviously... this is the Sky Striker, just my logic here. If this is a Sky Striker and it's being put in a book like this, they're definitely going to go, this thing is faster than the average F-14 Tomcat. So yeah, maybe this is definitely faster. Well, and cool, power to it.
What is the meaning of the added designation then, if it's not better than the average?
Exactly, right?
F-14. It's the XP-14F.
They put the F behind the 14. I mean, you know it's
badass. So this was a mini poster. In fact, not a mini poster. This was a centerfold of that particular issue. What a delight to have this to hand. In fact, I think I might actually have the physical version of this spread.
Hmm.
What a joy. Oof. It can fire its 20mm cannon at either 4,000 or 6,000 rounds per minute.
Hmm. It's
mighty quick. Get through your ammo real fast.
There we go, done.
Oh, there is the variation, of course. To the cannons. The 30th anniversary, which you have, Paul, has the kind of the more modern take, the revision, which is the grill.
That is allegedly a gun.
Yeah, it doesn't look great, does it? Rob, your version has the old school, the first release, the sort of just like a very smoothed out nacelle.
Yeah, it's very straightforward. There's basically, it's very straightforward. There's nothing extra going on there. It could be a gun. It could just be the port where, you know, where it refuels, maybe.
Hmm. I like that.
Yeah, I like the idea of it being a refueling port. Why not?
Yeah, me well, too. Then, shall we debate what the hell this thing is? The some people call it a bomb. Some people call it a fuel pod. I'd like to think it's a centerline gun pod, very much like the Veritech fighter. I'm referring to the massive dark gray or black, depending on the version, thing that occupies the center line of the Sky Striker. Apparently, it was glued in place on original Sky Strikers. Did you guys know that?
Oh, my. I did not know that. My goodness. I'm so happy we can remove it on our later versions.
Is it a fuel pod? Is it a bomb? Paul, what do you think?
I like the idea of it being a fuel pod. I know it's mm-hmm. it's like very romantic to have it to be another missile or a bomb or something, but these things fly long range, and in the cartoon the Sky Striker is flying everywhere, so having an additional fuel pod is better. Also, like
3,220 kilometers according to the TAC.
Wow. Because, like, also, I mean, G.I. Joe are, like, a covert operation. They can't, like, always order long-range air refuel, like, all the time. I mean, that would appear on the government's books all the time. So I imagine them having long-range flight pods on there.
Yeah, I usually default to it being a fuel pod as well. Mm-hmm. Although, like, the little notches at the front do suggest it being a gun, like a centerline gun.
Yeah. I like it being a gun, guys. I do not like the fact that the gun is in the nose, because that gun basically would be in the pilot's lap.
Yeah, you'd be sitting. That's what keeps him warm on those long flights.
I just really get freaked out by the fact that there is, let's just say, mine doesn't have it illustrated, okay, because of but the pod would be here, okay? So you're shooting, and that's fine. You're pulling up. Let's say you pull up, so your bullet drag goes down that way. Mm-hmm. But let's say your maneuver goes this way, and your guns are still going. That's why that always freaks me out, the idea that the bullets can, like, catch here underneath the...
Well, Paul, it's not without precedent, all right? The original F4 Phantoms had no gun. Famously, it was, entering dogfights in Vietnam with no gun, just missiles. Mm. And they thought that was a mistake, and they corrected it by initially fitting a gun pod. Eventually, they had versions that had a cannon, integrated into the nose. But, those initial F4s were re-outfitted with a pod more or less in the same place as the Sky Striker's pod. It
just feels like a bad idea. But then again, I don't know.
You're a fan of Macross. And where's the gun pod on a Veritech fighter?
Oh, the Valkyries. Yeah, they are underneath, but they're not as far back. They're further in the front. In fact, I can illustrate.
He's got a toy to hand. If you are watching at the moment, you're seeing the order of battle appearance for the Sky Striker. So all you guys who are, in fact, doing your measurements in Imperial... the maximum speed is 1,544 miles per hour, which is Mach 2.3 at 60,000 feet. It can do Mach 1.36 at sea level. Still blisteringly fast, and that's 910 miles per hour. Its maximum range is 2,200 miles. That's like 3,300 Ks, I think, which is basically Joburg, Cape Town, and then back to Joburg.
Wow.
Amazing. And then it talks about the ordnance being the two Phoenix missiles, the two Sparrow radar missiles, and the Sidewinder short-range air-to-air heatseekers. And that's the standard layout for the Sky Striker, and that's been kind of retained in both your versions, gents. But about the HasLab ever so slightly...
Ooh, there's a difference? Ooh.
There is, boys.
Oh my goodness, reinventing the wheel.
This is my version currently. It is the Sky Striker that formed part of the 2023 HasLab campaign. Or was it 22? I have given it a motherload of weapons, of ordnance. Firstly, you've got the optional parts to, instead of having a single dog bone pin closest to the wing sweep, it gives you a double. So I've Whoa. Got a sidewinder and a sparrow on each side. Then I have put four Phoenix missiles. Because why wouldn't you want to be able to lob a tree trunk at your enemy from like 30 nautical miles away? I mean, the massive advantage that the Tomcat had, which it still retains to this day, is the fact that it mounted these behemoth missiles, which just outranged anything contemporary to them. And the ability to knock out targets before they even get a chance to retaliate, that's massive. That's modern air combat in a nutshell. You fire the missile, you forget about it, you go defensive or evasive, you get out of there, and somewhere far in the distance, your enemy goes down in flames.
He just disappears.
It's the hand of God. And then right back from the nose, I decided to put an extra two radar-guided Sparrow missiles. So that's a total of, math don't fail me now, 10 missiles on my Sky Striker.
Checks out.
Damn.
Oh, and the ones that I've got in the center. Are those Sparrows? These in the front? Yes. Yes. I figured, I mean, you want to be attacking at range, so only two Sidewinders if things get really
AMRAAM, Sparrows, and Phoenix. Okay, cool.
There you go. Now, you might be scratching your head if you're familiar with the HasLab Sky Striker. How am I getting Phoenix missiles in the middle there? Well, because of these gargantuan gutters that they decide to include because of the flight stand feature. I hate it, by the way. It makes this very crowded in the middle there, whereas the original Sky Striker was a lot more smooth. And I used the additional dog bone pins to stick missiles into those tracks.
Smart.
Yeah. So maximizing on ordnance. I bet she handles.
I'm amazed
like
that thing takes off. How does it take off? So heavy.
I have seen. I mean, you don't have to look far to find actual Tomcats showing you their bellies filled with Phoenix missiles.
Oh yeah.
Just epic numbers of these. As I say, tree trunks.
Wild.
And I think that is one of landing is scary. Oh, that ordinance.
Well, you just well, yes. They're not active the whole time.
No, they're not.
I think probably one of the most winning things about the Sky Strike is that it is based off a real world jet. I mean, it's probably one of the most real world vehicles we have in G.I. Joe, I think. And it already has that iconic look to it, because it really was the top fighter that the United States had for however many years they had it. And I think that lends itself to its popularity as well, because it's so iconic to you in real life and in your toy play too.
When did Top Gun come out?
1986.
Okay, so it's way after the Sky Striker.
Yeah, they were obviously inspired by the Sky Striker. They probably used them on set when they were doing like the previs of the time. They're like, okay, I want the shots to be like this.
I would not.
He'd grab his Sky Striker and he'd fly it around. And then I would them to not go like be this, surprised. The canopy to canopy. And he's got to like.
Maybe not even then.
Thumbs up.
At the pitch briefing, one of them probably grabbed their like kid's Sky Striker and brought it to a meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, probably.
You know.
Like I can imagine sure. that.
I'm currently looking at the Impel plane. Card. Yeah. It's on screen at the Ooh. Moment. This is from, I think, 1991 or 92. Impel did a series of G.I. Joe trading cards. And this one actually details how many rounds are in the gun. 675 rounds. So if you're firing at a rate of 6,000 rounds per minute, that's what, less than 10 seconds?
Yeah, you're done.
No, this thing's going to blow its load before
it's also happens. Interesting, I mean, Seven looking seconds. At those stats... I was just looking up on Wikipedia now. The Tomcat, so they describe the Sky Striker here as having a twin TF-30 engine. And that's actually the engine that the Tomcat originally came with, which did allow it to go up to 2.3, Mach 2.3. But it was also apparently a thing of contention because apparently the engine was very faulty. So they eventually did replace it for later versions, despite the fact that it gave the jet some of the best weight to fuel efficiency, like ratios.
Huh.
Yeah.
Nice. You probably find that it could
bring
go
the stats, buddy.
Nice one, dude. You probably find that it could like go up to 2.3 then, but it was never pushed to 2.3.
Yeah, it wasn't required to have to do that, yeah. But I mean, it could if it wanted to.
Probably find that they had these like important briefings about this is the operational speed of your F-14.
Needs to go that far.
Do not fly it faster than this. When doing this maneuver, reduce speed to this. In this weather condition, reduce it to that. You know?
Wow, we're really getting like they've done tons of stats on this thing. Like I thought like the blueprints was like the be all and end all, but like
No. Phew. Oh yeah. You actually own this comic book. On screen at the moment we've got the battle files.
I could actually probably grab it right now.
Yes, Devil's Due once again dipped their toe in the well of the Sky Striker, and even as late as what was this, 2002? It was still G.I. Joe's primary jet fighter. It had not been supplanted by the Storm Eagle or by the what was it at the time? Oh, Hans Chow is going to kill me for this. I mean, he actually, it's like G.I. Joe's F-22 answer.
Yeah, the name of which escapes me as well. But then also, if you look at like real, if you take it from a realistic point of view, an F-22 is not a dogfighter. And by the time that this comic was published,
it doesn't need to dogfight. Everything's dead before it reaches.
Exactly, but that's exactly the point I want to make. At the time when this was actually published, it's more romantic to have Sky Striker as the sort of arrowhead of G.I. Joe's air support or air like influence, because air combat became exactly that. It was like two jets very, very far away from that. That's what it is now, pretty much. It's two far of jets very far from each other, and the one's going, my missile will outpace your missile. And also, I noticed you before you noticed me.
We're going to get grief in the comments because that's not entirely accurate. I mean, like, the air war over Ukraine is being fought by... It's not being fought by stealth. Like,
no, it's not being fought by the 22. By
fourth generation fighters, like mix. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like old jets going up there for sure. Biplanes.
I'm sure they'd love to have a few F-14s if they were serviceable. Lobbing missiles like the Phoenix.
Image gave the jet an extra 300 rounds. It had 950 rounds for its main cannon in the battle files.
There you go. So
they're not very consistent.
Almost like 10 seconds worth of ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how much do you need? I mean, if you're behind another plane,
if you're a good enough jet truck and you have that much composure, you're only really going to squeeze.
You can shred a tail quickly
when you've got it passing your nose. Still, I mean, it's
basically. I mean, what's the first rule of air combat? Is not to let anything behind you. So,
I don't know, man. With all that heavy
never
breathing,
see
that was
what you're shooting
in Top Gun
at.
Maverick.
I think that's the number one rule. Don't see what you're shooting at because we haven't given you enough ammo to shoot that thing down.
let's talk about the plastic, boys.
Yeah, thing. Let's get back to the toy. We've been too armchair technical, ridiculous.
Are proving that like people love this jet. I mean, like they've whenever they get the chance, they talk about it. You know, they've kind of covered it over and over and over again. Hasbro itself, all of the different medias, you know, it's featured in everything. And why? Because the toy itself, the original one, I mean, is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it's
perfect.
Not
this one, which is just an X. No.
Well, it's a good, you know, an interpretation, I think. But yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's made of very tough, it feels very tough, the plastic. It obviously comes with all the beautiful stuff that we've been seeing in the all the stats that we've been looking at. It's very well equipped, very, very well equipped. And it's so cool that it actually has a mechanism, you know, that will actually fold the wings in and put the landing gear in as well. I think that's probably one of the coolest features. I mean, you want to be able to fly this thing with no landing gear popping out.
Until they one-upped it, boys.
Yes, I think definitely. I mean, even we, I think, talked about this once when we were like, how could you improve the Sky Striker? And that really is the biggest improvement, I think, that you could ever make for the toy is allowing it to have the wings straight out.
Yeah.
Yeah, independently move the landing gear. I think if nothing else, the
HasLab certainly takes up less space on a flag deck.
Oh, absolutely.
Can we talk about... We've spoken a lot about the Sky Striker in a sort of abstract playground technical way, but I think we should talk about the toy as well a little bit, and like talk about like what makes this toy interesting, like what makes the actual Sky Striker a cool toy, and what are the things that suck about it. And I think it's actually worth mentioning both the 2011 in these arguments, in these conversations, and of course the HasLab one. Obviously, we don't want to go into too deep dive, but like I do want to fire this off with the 2011, because I feel like I have poo-pooed the 2011 quite a lot on this breakdown on our commentary on the Sky Striker, but there are a few things that are actually very cool about it, even if they are a little bit maybe abstract. Okay, so I like the cockpit detail. It's not the best or the coolest looking cockpit, but I do like that the cockpit itself is actually very interesting. It is great for, like, if you take it from a play motion point of view, it's nice to have a camera up in here, and it's cool.
The seat has ejection handles. It's got the side stick for control, which is not a hallmark of the F-14, but it's cool.
It's cool. It's there, you know. But, yeah, at least you do have two, like, flight sticks in there in the cockpit.
Can you get your figure to grasp it, though?
You can, but it takes a lot of effort. It's not an easy in, easy out kind of situation.
It's quite flush against the side wall of the jet.
Yeah, you have to really like get in there. And also, this might be kind of a controversial topic amongst many out there. I do love that the 2011 came with different livery for the plane. So like, you've got the traditional like, you had options, and they sort of leaned into the Sunbow silliness of giving you like Hector Shipwreck Delgado as a pilot option, which I mean, which is how I've detailed up my Sky Striker, because I love the ridiculousness of that.
And
I love
you've Sky, given it I the love yellow and Shipwreck. Black striping as opposed to the red, white, and blue, because are more in line with what the movie G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra.
No, I've just put it in line to be with Shipwreck. So like, I just felt yellow and blue was a cool color for the Bravo part of the wing, you know, like it's like
yellow and black.
Gold team. Yeah.
All right.
So
I think a nice improvement with that version too is that you can open that canopy with confidence. Like whenever I open my canopy, I'm like, ooh, you kind of have to like hook it back. You open it and you have to like hook it back so it stays up. And you're like, am I pushing it too far?
Creaking the whole time. Yeah, terrifying.
I mean, not pictured as on my tail wings, on my tail stabilizers and stuff. I've got the actual whale graphic on mine to go with Shipwreck. I thought that was like a cute little thing. It's a funny thing. But yeah, so guys, the one thing about this Sky Striker is if for some reason you can get it like for a really good price, mint in box or complete in box with the sticker sheet, you'll be very happy to know that the sticker sheet is quite, it's quite awesome. It's got a lot of options and all that. Not that you're going to go buy this just for a sticker sheet, but anyway, you're getting a really cool sticker sheet with it. And
might as well just get
I'm not mad about those sort of signature designs, though. Like,
yeah, they didn't choose the coolest ideas.
Like, why would Shipwrecks be the whale? He didn't come with the whale. He's not a Coast Guardsman. It's Cutter's ride. Like, Shipwreck should be whatever the hell his tattoo is. What is that, like a shark with an anchor?
Shark and an anchor.
If they
But then that'd be two on the nose, wouldn't it? I mean, like, let's just put your personal tattoo on our aircraft.
Well, I've never figured that Flint was like a skull kind of guy, but his signature design on that sticker sheet for a Sky Striker decoed up to be Flint's is like a skull wearing a beret with like shotguns.
Oh, no, I would have expected
that video. It's so much like that video game.
It's very expendables, if you ask me.
I would have expected a really cool design of like Lady J sitting on the, you know, in the circle,
riding a bomb,
like cheering him on.
Yeah,
the shaft, you know, so, one of her spears.
So the 2011, so the 2011 version is not like a complete bust. It's got something.
No, for sure. I think if you have no other option, I think it's still a very good. It's a good. It is the Sky Striker, you know. I think I think it's fine for what it is. It was their attempt to kind of like get the vehicle out there again at obviously a lower cost, and to redesign it in a way that it would fit onto modern toy shelves.
Yeah, I mean it's a similar flavor.
Thanks for the effort, I guess.
Yeah.
But then what an underwhelming experience, Rob. We actually went up onto Signal Hill, which is where we shot the Hurricane review. It's where we shot sequences for Red Glare.
For many of our videos. It's a cool
place where you can shoot aerial photography with like a sheer drop-off to the ocean. So you just got sky and sea. Beautiful. Straight horizon line. Perfect for cheating the scale. But we didn't shoot a shred of footage that day because we just hated these fucking things so much. I was crestfallen. I was like, what? What have they done to my boy? Like
the real one.
It sucks.
Yeah. And then let's just talk about, I just want to do a quick rundown of what sucks about this. Okay. So guys, and it's worth mentioning, the bombs fall off. It's really annoying. When you have got the tail stabilizers and stuff on, they are very wiggly and it's very irritating. Like, they just,
yeah, they don't.
That's
stay
why mine are off. Well. Actually, it's an OCD thing. It irritates the crap out of me. Single seater cockpit, which a lot of people bemoan and are annoyed about, and a lot of apologists like to defend by saying, "Yeah, but you know, modern." I'm like, no, it's cuck. They could have just extended the canopy and made it a two seater. Don't know why they didn't, because money. But anyway, The matte finish might not be for everybody. Some people might want the classic vintage shininess. So this is like a good and a bad thing, is the matte finish. You might not like it. And then I mentioned the bombs keep falling off. Oh, also landing gear. This here is very like chintzy. I'm talking about the wheelbase. The landing gear base are very chintzy feeling. It bugs me a lot.
Plastic wheels.
Yeah, plastic wheels. And yeah, I have modified mine, so only the landing gear comes out. But yeah, plastic wheels, it feels a bit, it's got a shitty roll feeling, like it doesn't roll as nicely as the classic one, I'm led to believe. But this one, anything
better than it rolls better than the HasLab does.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And then also, I feel like this is a criticism that can be leveraged at the vintage as well. But this I understand. Landing gear out and wings out like that is very silly looking, in my opinion. So I really kind of wish they had inverted it a little bit. But that's just been sold by HasLab.
Anyway, you have to, just as a disclaimer, you have modified yours to disassociate the wing sweep from the landing gear. You opened it up, you cut the teeth. But yeah, your wings now sag, unfortunately. They don't stay. Yes,
if I have it on the wall. I mean, I can actually go in there with some super glue and make it bite better so that it doesn't fall down as easily. But anyway, guys, I just wanted to give a rundown of the actual toy if anybody was in the market to buy one of these. Cool. Tell us about the vintage one, Rob. What makes the vintage one so cool?
I think, as I said earlier, I mean, it looks like an iconic jet. It looks like the Tomcat. It feels, the weight is actually quite nice. It feels very solid, I think, in general. It is shinier than the 2011 one. And, I mean, yes, of course, they had to kind of, like, pare down the size, but I still feel like it is a good size for a toy jet. And the fact that you can have two people in your cockpit is absolutely amazing. If you had to kind of, like, sit with only one character inside here, I mean, that would be absolutely awful.
Who have you got?
You can't put Mutt in there.
Well, there's no one in here currently, but who I usually do put in here into the cockpit you kind of can't not do it. Let me just put it down for a second. The original pilot that came with it is Ace. Very cool, kind of like proper, like, I mean, not space suit, but I mean, I'd imagine it's kind of like a
high G suit.
High G suit. Yeah, pressure suit. Yeah, so it kind of like gives him, you know, stable and able to like work at higher G's. Very, very cool figure in general, I think. The likeness is kind of nice as well.
Helps he to looks pump a little blood bit brain dead,
but
body. Yeah,
he still looks cool. I think a good guy that I sometimes put in the back if I want to kind of like at least simulate using the parachute, because mine does come with the parachute, would be Ripcord. I think he's a good guy to put in the back seat. You kind of, he just opens it up at Mark II, you know, a Mark II, he just opens the canopy, you know, shoots him out and kind of like flies on without him, without the back seat. And
Rob,
I
just mentioned something.
Oh, the canopy.
You just mentioned something. You mentioned something I totally forgot about now, dude. And this is this is the problem with having the modern Skystriker. You don't get the parachute and you forget it exists. And it's such a cool really feature of the original.
Yeah, carry it's gorgeous.
And the HasLab.
And the HasLab one, Their modern era version really lost out.
I hope you get a parachute.
But another good second pilot, a person in the back seat also, I think, would be Countdown. He's a good he's a good guy to put in the back seat.
with Star Brigade Countdown's helmet. Nice.
Yeah, you know, any color of Countdown should kind of go in the back there. I think
that's like player one and player two alternate colors. Nice.
Yeah, exactly. He's a very good, I think, second seat as well, because he also looks like he is in a pressure suit. You know, he is in a high G suit. I mean, unlike Paul's one, the missiles do stay on here properly. The ones on the side that, I mean, usually when you find with the side missiles, because of the way that they construct them, the little peg will often go straight through the missiles. Not in this case. They're actually built in a way that, it goes into the missile and doesn't go through the missile. So these missiles aren't like the Rattler. A lot of other G.I. Joe. Yes, unlike the Rattler, where it kind of like pierces straight through. And I mean, a lot of my Rattler ones are broken because of that. Mm. Yeah, so it definitely holds on very well. And yes, it has nice rubber wheels. The rubber wheels remove really well.
While you've got yours up, Rob, just notice how many more screw holes the HasLab has.
Show your banner and your screw holes.
I can see that now.
The OG 1983 version is just sublime.
It's much
smooth.
Smoother. It feels more realistic, I think, because, I mean, and also the placement of the screws inside the kind of like engine, I don't know, baffles or whatever you'd call these. It means you notice it from less angles. So you will really only see this from this angle straight on, like this from the bottom. I think even further back on the jet, there's only two more right at the back. And once again, they're placed inside the angle of the engines so that you wouldn't actually notice them from a lot of other angles.
Another thing
externally,
that brought my attention.
Four screws. It feels like there's four screws, unless there's a few more that are hidden under the missiles.
Rob, you know,
you're right there. It'll be two. So there's two at the back. There's two like kind of like near the wings. I can't see them because they're slightly under. But once again, hidden behind the little peg. Two near the front, and then there's also one right in the nose as well.
Oh, the essential
kind of
toe hitch.
It's important for it to be in there.
Which the 2011 doesn't work.
Whoa.
The 2011s cannot be towed by the flag's tow vehicle.
But Paul, what did I make you realize?
I don't know. What's in the air intakes in the front of yours? Because the 2011 has nothing. Look at that.
Well, no. I mean, yeah, unfortunately, yes. The original also has nothing in there.
I don't know why, but yours just looks nicer. And I'm not trying to be like a vintage.
The 1983's has more of a like a recess. It's more of a cavity.
I think it's more recessed.
Yeah,
you can look right into the guts
as well.
You can look right into the guts of the plane. Whereas also, 2011, it's just a flat wall.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Also,
it's almost up to my second knuckle on my finger.
Here, on the air takes. Look at
these.
There's two horrible screws here by the air takes on the side here. It completely messes up the form. Like, at least you guys have got the hole sort of in the middle there. It's like less, somewhat less offensive than what they did.
Way less noticeable.
Just saying. Yeah.
Now, I could
gorgeous
fill several podcasts talking about the HasLab Skystriker. I
as
wrote out a lengthy script for a review, which turned into more of a rant. And that is why I will never put that review to film. Yeah,
don't.
Basically, I reread it and I was like, no, this sounds like every keyboard warrior's like man-child rant about their fucking toy, and I'm not going to do it. This thing has been an emotional roller coaster. I've written the script, and cathartically, that means I can then put it into the back burner and never think about it again.
I mean, we give a lot of negative opinions on the show, but I think you will find that generally the overall arching thing of most of our content is very positive. We may have some negative opinions with our toys. Stuff, but we play with them, but then, having an entire episode just be like, oh, I hate this thing, this is why it's so shitty. Yeah.
Many shining like virtues. This thing is it's remarkable. It had some bunglings in terms of like it being sold as a kind of a battle in a box when all I really wanted was this gorgeousness. Mm-hmm. It came at a rather tragic time because I just bought my very first vintage Sky Striker. And then the very next week Hasbro announced this HasLab, and I was like,
no,
really? Okay, why are they doing the Sky Striker? I mean, we all questioned why the hell the Sky Striker again, but it does a lot of things remarkably right. I mean, we spoke about the wing sweep feature.
That is already a big one.
The fact that it's right at the box doesn't need stickering because it's got so many paint operations. All of these are painted details.
Wow.
Which means...
I don't think I ever realized that.
Yeah. Like, I haven't got a single decal on mine.
Sticker on there.
Everything that
Which
you
is
see...
fantastic because, I mean, with the age of the original, I mean, if you aren't putting repros on there, your stickers will eventually fall off. I mean, I have several actually that are missing from mine at this point.
Peeling. Sure. Mm. There were some corrections that I had to make with paint, sadly. Particularly the kind of on the combing, the black around the cockpit in some areas doesn't match up. Here it still doesn't match up, but like I had like white showing along the sort of the edges of the canopy. This section, the front section is individuated, which is realistic. So the back canopy glass kind of pulls away, leaving the front canopy glass still there. This is also removable, but I wouldn't advise you taking it out too many times because mine already started to show little stress marks thanks to it being clipped in and out multiple times. So I'm like, I'm not going to do that anymore. Ace 1983 is my pilot, thanks to Greg Crocott. And then I've got a Slipstream Spy Troops version from the Conquest of that year.
Which is a great looking pilot figure.
Well, he's great, and he just is very not Slipstream. You know, he doesn't have a removable helmet, so he could be anyone. So that's why he's my Wizzo.
Nice.
This is a hefty, hefty toy. All the features come at a cost. Rob, off-air, we spoke about the fact that it's got a glossy finish, much like the 1983.
Which I think is very cool.
Not only is it glossy, but I think all the wall thicknesses are greater than the original because this thing is a hefty beast. Like, it's a workout for me to manipulate it with one hand. So to be doing what I need to do to film this thing, it becomes very tiring very quickly. So it's weighty. Not sure I like the tinted canopy. I wish that was clearer. Like, what is this? Pimp my jet? Why would a jet need... like, you want more visibility, not less. Anyway.
I've got a good argument for that. It's just an age thing. Because clear will go yellow after a while. So,
future-proofing it.
But they gave you two in the box so that you could decal it distinctly and have a spare one.
That is cool. That is very cool. I like that kind of attention to detail.
But if it was going to come with two, give us a see-through one and then the brown one too.
They needed to pad out the value of this thing. I mean, the last minute scramble to throw in the extra Cobra figures is evidence of that. Like, they needed to push this over the line. And the reason the G.I. Joe line and HasLabs in general for G.I. Joe are doing as well as they're doing, I mean, Classified obviously has a huge thing to do with that, but if this didn't work, if the Sky Striker had failed, like, would they have been able to move so confidently on with the his tank? Like, one needed to happen for the next to happen, So, like, this was a sluggish start for the G.I. Joe Haslabs, but it did fund. So, like, they were able to move on to...
I mean, yeah, they came off very confidently. I mean, that was a confident start. And since then, I mean, all of the G.I. Joe Haslab stuff has been funded.
You know. It's all been classified. That's the hot ticket. Well, this is kind of a learning curve. They were like, okay, maybe O-Ring's not so hot right now.
It kind of works.
We misjudged this one. But I wanted to maybe talk about the made them landing gear to kind of close off with this. Because as I say, I could talk about it for a long time. You pull the arrestor hook and the landing gear comes out. The arrestor hook does fold down. What would really make this so sweet is if you could actually roll the goddamn landing gear. They rub. They clearly rushed the engineering on this, or the production of this, because it rubs against
the wheel.
Landing gear door. No. The wheel rubs against the door.
So the spring is too strong.
No, there's just a plastic rib that just needs to be maybe
slightly longer.
A millimeter more generous, then you'd have clearance. But sadly, it's right in there. And so the inner wheel will rub the door. Not only that, but they just messed the geometry up ever so slightly, that these rear wheels, if they'd gone a bit further forward, maybe there wouldn't be as much pressure on them conking in, caving in. But they just are angled too far back. So if you're coming in for a landing, chances are great you're going to belly in and scrape your very expensive jet. Not ideal. Particularly if you're landing on the desert floor or the grasslands, as that Commodore 64 game would have you believe. And the wheels themselves,
so it's great for
while
flying.
Rubber, do not have the best roll. No. I'm reminded of my favorite Sky Striker memory of all in this moment. Rob, you'd had your Sky Striker in hand for a few weeks. I had my Night Raven. It was late at night. We were doing some dogfighting, as we would typically do on the streets outside my parents' house.
Hell yeah.
And I wanted to see how these things handled on asphalt. I very gingerly let down the landing gear on my Raven and, like, placed it on the asphalt and then kind of just nudged it forward. Ooh, okay, it rolls. Okay, the rubber's nice. It's not scraping any of the plastic. Cool. You, dude, clack, bring down your landing gear and you're like, hell with this. If I'm going to test this landing gear, I'm going to test the landing gear. You were skating this thing down the street. I was like, dude.
He Top Gunned it, bro.
But
that's why you can't land in the video.
One
game.
Thing was made abundantly clear to me. No G.I. Joe jet or Cobra jet or any jet produced in the line since can ever top the amazing free rolling wheels of that vintage Sky Striker.
Yeah.
Rubber with I think it's a brass rivet in each of the wheels. Amazing, amazing tolerances, amazing engineering, amazing just roll.
Yeah, the correct angle. There's nothing pushing up against them, unlike your Haslab version. It really does. Like, I mean, if I put it on anything that wasn't too smooth, I'd probably roll off wherever I put it, I guess.
It ain't gonna belly in. The wheels don't cave in, and you know you can land it in high seas on your USS Flag, and
hell yeah.
That gear will stay true and stay down. Yeah. So, for all the bells and whistles of the Haslab, I kind of would trade it all just to be able to land this thing properly.
There you go. I mean, it seems like, yeah. I mean, they got so much right with the original. I think the only gripe is the fact that you can't differentiate the wings opening with the landing gear coming out. And they've just been trying to do, you know, improvements over the years with these vehicles. But they just can't get it as good as they got it originally, you know, 40 years ago, 41 years, Oh, gosh.
It's insane. Ages.
But, I mean, so we have been poo-pooing the 2011 version, but I think probably the best thing, at least for us, is that it is a very good stand-in for the original version, so that when we do our play motions, we can you can fly the original, and then if you really actually want to like physically crash a Sky Striker into a into sand, we
bring
can
in
do
the
that
stunt
with the 2011
striker.
Version.
You're the stunt striker, yeah.
As long as I open the canopy, you will not realize it's not the same version.
Rating this is going to be a curiosity, because we're each rating a different version.
It's tough.
I'm gonna be, I suppose, right down the middle on mine and say 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
What it does exceptionally. It brings a lot to the party, but against its favor, the fact that it was a HasLab, an exclusive, which even if you were trying to finagle some way of getting it ahead of the deadline, you had to be in certain parts of the world. I was not in one of those parts of the world. I ate shit for mine. To this day, it kind of, I'm bitter about it. It was a box full of things that I didn't need. I just wanted the purity of the experience of this jet again. I was not interested in the bells and whistles. I have carded figures that I don't know what to do with. They're just going to sit in the box. Rot. blast effects as well. Gross. Who needs that? So yes, it's a 3 for me. Paul, do you dip even lower?
Yeah, guys, the 2011 is also very, it's very middling, but for very different reasons. When I give it a 3 out of 5, it's not the same scale that Steven's using to judge the HasLab Sky Striker, in my opinion. I feel like the 2011 is the version you get if you couldn't be asked to try and get a complete vintage Sky Striker. Like, you haven't got the resources, maybe you haven't got the budget, and you sure as shit don't want to go and do all of the driving around and looking for the parts and going onto eBay and doing the toy dealings and all that stuff to get it. So, like, yeah, the 2011 is the Sky Striker you want if you don't want to spend a lot of money and don't want to put a lot of effort into it. And for that, it gets 3 out of 5. It's good. It's good enough. It's good enough to get the job done. And yes, if you play motion, it's a great stunt striker. It's cool to have. Whoops, I dropped it. Oh, well.
Hi, Paul. I think 3 out of 5 is way too generous, man. I obviously haven't impressed upon you enough how crestfallen Rob and I were at that moment.
Dude, I hate this guy. Like, maybe I should then add that my impression, my feelings toward the Sky Striker before I got the 2011 versions were here. And when I got the 2011 version, my feeling about Sky Strikers are here. For me, it's just a big plastic F-14.
So they went from high to low. Is that
to low? The 2011 version killed the magic of the Sky Striker for me, like almost instantly.
Which is the biggest crime, really. Rob, do you have a purity to add to this? I mean, your first blush with the thing was the ultimate. Right.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, which is why I can maintain my record of giving these things, 5 out of 5. It's definitely it's one of the ultimate vehicles. You know, it is the most iconic thing. I mean, everyone agrees, from Hasbro to fans to people outside of G.I. Joe. I think you see it. You can kind of associate it, the Tomcat with either us, I mean G.I. Joe, or with Tom Cruise. And yeah, it really is an ultimate vehicle. It literally cannot do any wrong, I think.
It's in the perfect Venn diagram, like, center of like accuracy, fun, playability. Fun and playability are the same thing, but like the HasLab skews too much towards like a premium feature.
Yeah, the premium is just that it's as good as it is, I think
that's true. If I was and I've been in this situation many times, but if I was had to put myself in a retail situation now, and I had all three of these mint in box on the shelf and they all had varying prices, and somebody had to ask me, well, of these three, which should I get, and why is the vintage one more expensive than the HasLab one, for example, I would say, well, you buy the HasLab one because you want all the bells and whistles. You don't play with your toy, really. You just want something cool for your toy display. It's got the boost effects. You can mess around with the missiles. It's got some cute little things here and there, as Steven mentioned. It's premium. The HasLab is you want to get your childhood back.
As I say I'm reminded of how crappy the carts are. Like the ammo, like the fuel truck, and the, like ain't nothing pretty but those pieces of shit.
Yeah, but they slung
a few turds in that box just to kind of pad out the perceived value.
But then, and the vintage version is you're spending this much money to get your childhood. You're getting the best version that is, as we've mentioned here, it's between a good-looking collectible and also being a very fun to play with collectible. And then the 2011 is the one you get for your kids so that they don't mess up your cool shit.
Yeah, if you can't afford anything else.
Get but heed my words, dear listener and viewers, that a 20-something Rob took his vintage 1983 Sky Striker and raced it down the asphalt street in the dead of night.
Like, and not that, that nice American asphalt that you guys have.
Made with. No. Oh yeah, and this is
so the African asphalt, like rocks, bro, with some tar
the real
and
stuff
a puddle.
Four-wheel drive Sky Striker. Anyways, we have been G.I. Joburg, and I've thoroughly enjoyed this chat. I feel lighter.
Oh, yeah.
Just
light as my wonderful Sky Striker. It's so light.
Monster of the air.
One hand.
It's missing in my collection. Oh, I suppose I should have mentioned that the modern version is basically a really great figure with a really shit accessory. That ace is really magic. It really is magic.
Yes.
Oh, Paul. Good job, guys. Black tails or white tails? Since the 2011 version only came with a black tail, would you have preferred...
The white tails.
White tails. Okay.
Wow.
White tails. Okay. White tails.
Or, let's call it vertical stabilizers in case anyone comes at
us. More homogenous. If there was contrast on any other part of the plane, other than like the rubbery nose bit, which is also like annoying, it would be fine. But the jet is one color, so have it one color. You know, have the thrusters be the dark meat. Yeah, I don't know. Thrusters and missiles be the dark meat. Tail stabilizers and tail fins, whatever vertical stabilizers, should all be like the same color, at least on this specimen. Yeah.
Agreed. Well, I think we better point our toes towards the door. Gentlemen, this has been a blast. I hope you've enjoyed watching or listening to this episode as much as we've enjoyed giving it. Fascinating debates. And if you are on the YouTube version, drop down into the comments. Let us know what your favorite version of the Sky Striker is. Is it 1983? Is it 2011? Is it 2023? Or any of the versions in between. If you feel like you've been personally attacked in any of our criticisms, please champion your chosen Sky Striker, because at the end of the day, if you enjoy your toy, well, that's what it's all about.
Who's to say you can't?
Freaking Joe.
Wait before we do our somersault out, just a huge thank you to our Patreons.
Oh yeah. Hey guys,
Helping us make all of this cool magic happen. And also, because you guys are gonna get this early, the Patreon and the YouTube members will get this early to watch. So, and also just want to introduce Legend Series and Pete Moline to the wall, to the green wall.
New patrons. That's amazing. Yeah. Thank you guys for joining us.
And I think summer is starting to get to the American sides of the world. So why not get yourself a cool G.I. Joburg t-shirt? Yay! I have to push the merch, man. It's cool merch. Especially because I know that the merch that we have is at least good quality, so that makes me very happy. I love it. I love it when people buy our merch and post pictures of it on Insta and on Facebook. I actually download or screenshot it every single time for my little collection. It's super cool. Maybe
yes, maybe pictures one day, of you on his wall, guys.
Not on my wall.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys. You make the magic happen. Really appreciate it. Go and fly your Sky Strikers, right?
Do it.
Next week we'll be coming at you live, talking about comics, toys, whatever's new and hot and happy.
Maybe a cartoon.
Something related to G.I. Joe.
Damn. All right.
Wait.